You're listening to Trek FM.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Welcome, everyone, to Trek FM's local watering hole, where you guys know hosts from the network. And what's great about today is I just had some friends drop by, and both of them come from Educating Geeks, and I'm so glad to have these ladies back to join me. We're going to be talking about Terminator Genisys, but before we... I don't know. Anyway,
whatever.
Yeah, it's spelled really weird. You can tell that some corporation named that and thought it was really cool.
It's like unobtainium in in Avatar. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Ugh. Yeah. You knew James Cameron was all over that one. If people think that George Lucas is bad with coming up with things, I mean, come on. Unobtainium?
Right?
I rest my case. But that's right. You hear the dulcet tones of Alice Baker from Educating Geeks. Welcome back, Alice.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here in the 602 Club.
Well, good, good. Tonight, I feel like we might all need something really stiff to drink talking about this movie. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to give away my thoughts on the film just yet. But Drea, it's great to have you back here in the 602 talking about Terminator. You know, that one that just came out.
The weird one, like Jedi Sice, or
I think that's exactly how it says.
Yeah, that's
Geniasis. Yeah, I love that. So, well, I was kind of trying to put myself, okay, how are we going to discuss this? You know, there's four other Terminator movies that came before this one, and I kind of thought of it as like, okay, we have the Road to Judgment Day, because every single movie is about trying to stop Judgment Day. It's the same plot. It hasn't changed since 1984. James Cameron, he gave us the original Terminator, really kind of put Arnold on the map officially as an international star, which, I mean, it's not surprising if you go back and watch that film. And then, of course, I think even more so, 2009 did that with Terminator Judgment Day. And, the amazing special effects of Mr. Metal Dude was just incredible, especially back then. Even now, watching it, it still looks fantastic.
See, I never remember the plot to that one, though. It gets a little loosey-goosey and a little crazy in the middle somewhere. I multiple times have to be like, I know that's the one with Christian Bale, but that's about all I remember.
No, the one with Christian Bale is actually not till 2009, right. And that's Terminator Salvation. Mm. Where, Christian Bale just spends the whole time talking like Batman.
He just brutes the entire time, yeah.
We've been fighting this war since either of us was born.
I wonder if that was his audition tape. Like,
probably was.
For Batman, they were like, that voice, we have to have that voice.
That's probably it. You know, just everybody thought, well, he can be Batman, so he's got to be John Connor. And in between that 2009 and 1991... we had the third movie, which was Terminator 3, and that was in 2003, had Claire Danes in it. It had the female Terminator in it. It was kind of a combination of the Arnold Terminator and the Liquid Terminator. And so I kind of wanted to ask you guys, just for you, where do you find yourself on this road to Judgment Day? How did you kind of find the Terminator films? And, you know, which ones are you a fan of, at least before we start talking about Genisys, how would you rank them?
Okay, so for me being the old lady at the mic here, so graduated high school in 1984, right? So the original Terminator, right? The original Terminator is like right in my wheelhouse. So I have a lot of nostalgia for that movie. So I still very much love that movie. That movie is still very much watchable for me. And then they just basically march downhill from there. I know a lot of people really like the second film better than the first film, and I still like the second film, but for me, the first film is the ultimate. I did see Terminator 3 in the movie theater, and I saw Terminator Salvation in the movie theater, as I saw this one, but they basically just march, They just march downhill for me.
What about you, Drea?
I like the original. I totally have to agree with Alice. Aside from the whole graduating high school thing when the first one came out, I was not born when the first one came out.
Oh my gosh. Now I feel old too, Alice.
So, but I totally agree. The original is it's got that like lovely 80s charm to it that makes it deliciously campy and amazing at the same time. And I think from there, I agree. They sort of teeter off for me. And like I said a little while ago, then the 2009 one with Christian Bale, like, I have no idea. I can't even remember what that one's about. Like, Rob has told me, my husband's told me like a handful of times, and I'm still like, huh? What? I know I saw it, but it's not ringing any bells here.
I'm somewhere in the middle between you two. And being born in 79, I didn't really see the original Terminator till... Oh gosh, I was probably like in her high school at that point, and you know, I got to see the original, and then I got to see Judgment Day, and then of course not too long after that, Rise of the Machines, Terminator 3 came out, and of course then later on down the road, I was excited for Terminator Salvation until I actually saw it in the theater, and haven't seen it since because, well. If I'd wanted to see a Batman movie, I just would have gone to see it in a Batman movie. But, yeah, I personally like Judgment Day the best, and then probably the original Terminator, Rise of the Machines, and then way down, if there is a list of, you know, bottom-feeding crap, and then 50 feet below that, there's Terminator Salvation. That's just kind of how I felt about it. So, you know, that's kind of my road to Judgment Day. But I remember, too, and one of the best things that I really enjoyed about the film, especially the second one, was just that music. You know. And that music right there, it's real powerful. And I personally have never seen the Sarah Connor Chronicles, the TV show they did. So that is something that I'll hopefully get a chance to maybe go back and watch sometime and kind of see.
Yeah, I agree. I've only seen snippets of it, but the snippets that I did see did make me put it on the list of things that I would go back to check out.
Yeah, I think that would be really interesting. I mean, you did have Summer Glau in that film, in that show, and so I think that makes it interesting enough. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those Fox shows that unfortunately they don't like to stay with their shows. So
it got two seasons, I think. Right? Does that sound right? Anybody?
I thought it maybe got one more than that, but I honestly don't know.
It ran from 2008 to 2009, so I think it just got two seasons.
Okay, yeah, two seasons.
So
that tends to be what Fox gives you. They either give you one or two seasons to prove yourself, yep. And then if you don't, then you're kind of out.
Well, and it's only 31 episodes.
So they were short, too. Just,
yeah, so they were even short on that second season. They kind of cut them off at the knees, so kind of like a Terminator might do to you.
So, did they play the theme music when they did it? They were like, hey, let's hope. Dun, 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 dun. And then, I'm sorry, you've been canceled.
Could you do that to Summer Glau, though? I mean, she might just give you that, like, super sweet face that she can do, and then you just kind of melt like a Terminator that's made out of liquid.
That's how, is that how you kill those ones? I learned something.
I think
tonight.
You just give them a look. Yeah. That or you splash them with water, kind of like the Wicked Witch of the West.
Oh, see, I learn something every day.
Well, okay, this film is called Genesis. And I do have to say, the name for the film itself got better for me when I saw the movie and realized that it was an operating system called Genesis, and realized it had been named by a corporation trying to be all hip and cool with their new software that was going to link everything together for you in your life. So I was like, okay, I can actually get behind the name now. It makes more sense. So that part was alleviated for me, so I kind of like it.
It was the really name? Hard. Yeah, it was hard to get on board with it at first, though, because you're like, this is the dumbest name ever.
Yeah. You're like, why did you put a Y there just to be, is that supposed to be clever?
Well, it's like after Microsoft and big P power, big P point, and everyone would name their companies or products two words, then they would capital letter both of the two words and put them together. I mean, yeah, whatever.
It's one of those clever marketing things that you're like, it still has to make sense, people.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it makes sense to call this product that they're giving the world Genesis, because it is really the start of something completely new for the computer age, something that is going to link everything, which, no, that can't be a bad idea. You know, luckily, we realize it's because of the background machinations of the machines working, you know, from in the past, from the future, and an alternate timeline. So if that just made your mind explode, that's exactly... Yeah, welcome to the Terminator universe, where this one does a whole Doctor Who, Star Trek 09 thing, and kind of creates a wibbly, wobbly, timey-wimey Terminator film. And so what did you guys think about that whole idea of trying to pay homage to everything that had come before, but obviously they're really trying to open up a whole new world of possibilities for themselves sequel-wise here?
I would say that, you know, all of the Terminator movies have had questionable timeline issues in them. So in what's questionable, I mean, the whole, you know, there are these quote unquote rules about time travel and whatnot. Well, who got to make those rules and whatever. So in terms of that, I kind of let it wash over me like I did with the other films. You know, if I'm spending my time thinking about like, well, gosh, that doesn't make sense in this timeline. And well, then how does that timeline hook up? It means that they're really doing a poor job of telling their story and providing interesting visuals to look at, because I'm not, you know, I haven't suspended my disbelief enough, right? Because I'm now having to think about all this other stuff. And for the most part, I didn't find myself doing that. There were some nods to the other films in the series that I super, super enjoyed. I thought Byung-Hun Lee, you know, being the liquid Terminator, did an amazing job of almost completely mimicking the actor who played that character in the earlier film. The fact that J.K. Simmons was in there and how they played with his character. So those kinds of very clever nods I enjoyed. The really sort of obvious boom boom nods, like come with me if you want to live and things like that, were less successful for me. But honestly, there wasn't, I wasn't, you know, rolling my eyes and groaning the whole time. So it didn't completely fail for me. Wasn't a complete success either, but it was okay.
Yeah, I agree. I think with the timelines, Terminator sort of has created its own rules with time travel, and you kind of just have to get on board with the Terminator rules for time travel and how it works. And once you do that, then it's fine. You just have to not think too hard about the whole butterfly effect thing. The only place they lost me a little bit is when Kyle Reese became a kid magically in this new timeline, like he was born however many years after. That to me was a little weird. But it was one of those things where I take pause and I was like, all right, well, let's just go with it. And I didn't really start thinking about it too much until I was done out of the movie, sitting down out, like after I left the theater. And even then it was more like, I wonder why they did that. Oh, well. So it wasn't horrible for me. Some of the more obvious nods I didn't mind. I think they know they were cheesy and campy, and I don't mind it. Some of the play on it where she says, come with me if you want to live, instead of the other way around, I thought was kind of clever. Yeah, overall, I enjoyed it, and I'm also glad I didn't read anything about it until afterwards, because reading the Tomatoes rating was really depressing. I believe it got like a 27%, which is terrible.
Yeah, it is really bad.
They ripped it a new one. Like, really ripped it a new one.
Yeah. It's, you know, the whole Terminator time travel rules, I kind of have to just kind of feel like Star Trek First Contact, where she's like, time, we don't have time to argue about time. We just don't have the time.
That was good.
But unfortunately, I was somebody who was like, wait, okay, Terminator plays by the butterfly effect rules. And it's that if you go back into the past, you change the future. Like, that's why they keep going back into the past and why there's this whole almost temporal Cold War that they've been fighting. And to another Star Trek reference for those people out there who are listening, know that stuff. That's how the whole thing has worked. And then this one, they threw in, well, now we're going to say that that's not really how, or we're going to add a new layer to our already convoluted time travel rules and say that, but we can also create alternate universes or dimensions, or they never really explain that there's somehow, yeah, when you're in the quantum reality, when Arnold starts explaining quantum mechanics to you in a film, you know that you're in trouble. And I felt just like Kyle Reese when he's like, I'm going to find the button, and I'm going to shut up. So I understand exactly why they're doing it. They're trying to pull off Star Trek 2009 or Doctor Who type of thing, where you can use time travel rules however you want so that you can create for yourself a new timeline to play in, because they're obviously doing that. They're wanting to set this up for more movies. I mean, right. There's the end credit scene that
Well, and there's no, I mean, in this case, it's not, there's time travel, but it's mixed with dimension now, right? So now we have more mm-hmm. than one timeline, which, you know, is something that you often bring up, Matt, about, you know, Earth Prime and Earth 2 and all of those kinds of things. So even that concept, and, you know, not that I want to be putting myself in the position to defend this movie necessarily, but again, I was just kind of like, whatever, okay.
Why not?
Add whatever.
Yeah. All right. The Terminator multiversity is what we've got now.
I'm in a cold
welcome
movie
to the new Genesis.
Having some popcorn. I'm okay. I'm good. Whatever.
Let's just throw a dash of Fringe in here. Like, let's just make this really complicated and, like, hope we don't lose you along the way. And if you really stick with it, it'll probably pay off. However, we're going to make this difficult on you.
Don't you love a movie that's like, yeah, we're going to make this suck for you for about half of it. Hopefully you'll feel like it pays off in the end. If you don't, then you're going to end up like all the reviewers, you know. But what's so interesting, I think, really about this film is that it is, I mean, there was a funny quote. It was like, a Bush and a Clinton are running for president again. We have a Terminator film and a Jurassic Park film all together again. What year is this?
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. you know, another Superman film. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so it is funny because, you know, Jurassic World came out and it's torn up the box office in a way that nothing has done since, I think, Avatar. And it just keeps going. I mean, it was finally beat this weekend by Inside Out, but only by a couple $100,000. I mean, that's 3 weekends in a row. I haven't seen a movie be on top in 3 weekends in a row in years. So that movie hit the nostalgia train and it just keeps chugging. Whereas this film, I think, was hoping to do the same exact thing and reinvigorate a franchise. I just don't think that this one is as successful. And I'm not sure why, in the sense that this, it's
Pratt.
Not a terrible, yeah. There you
Pratt,
go.
Pratt,
two
Pratt,
words.
Pratt.
Chris Pratt and his abs.
On top of that, you have to factor in the horrible 2009 one with Christian Bale that was an original attempt to do the same thing that just totally tanked. So now you've just kind of like disillusioned all your Terminator fans, and no one's going in who's a big Terminator fan going, this is going to be awesome. People are going in like, let's see. I'll judge you when we're done. So I think that's a difference too. Like, people weren't like, yeah, Terminator. They were like, I don't know about this.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really valid point, Daria. But, and I don't, because I don't have the Jurassic nostalgia like I have the Terminator nostalgia. Wasn't there some like Jurassic Park 3D or Jurassic
Park
something?
Jurassic
something
Park 3
that
was
wasn't so awesome also?
Terrible.
No
yeah.
idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think it's a totally valid point.
You guys are making just great points, though. I think there is this thing that with Jurassic Park, that all of the millennial kids now are taking their kids to see it, you know, and whereas the Terminator 1 is already passed because, you know, the kids who went and saw Terminator 2, they also went and saw Terminator 3 and Salvation. And like you said, Dre, I think that by this point, they saw the reviews and they're like, I am not spending $12 per person in my family to go see a... So this movie is, I mean, a Terminator film that's rated PG-13. So we already know it's been watered down. I can't see where people were excited, you know, to go and see this because they're like, well, I mean, this isn't my Terminator, not even my daddy's Terminator. This isn't even my Terminator. Like, you know, we're talking Judgment Day, which is, you know, it's a great movie. It's pretty violent, but it's also clean violence for the most part. There's nothing ridiculously abhorrent. It's not gory or anything like that. But yeah, I feel like everybody kind of, this movie just came to a screeching halt. Mm-hmm. And that is too bad because I guess going in it with no expectations, I wasn't too
horrified,
distraught or horrified or anything like that. I mean, I turned to my wife after the film and I was like, what'd you think? She's like, yeah, it was all right. You know, like, it's not blowing us away, but it wasn't like god awful as I think some of the reviews have given it.
Yeah.
At least I didn't see that. I mean, and if I wanted to, I mean, we could pick this film clean with plot holes. I mean, we'd be having, Rose Terminator.
I can pick any film apart. Even if I liked it, I can pick it apart.
Don't challenge her. She'll do it.
And then there was that one time, and then there's that time, and then... No, I completely get it. Well, this movie is kind of full of old friends, is how I was like.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
And, you know, we've got Arnold back, which, I mean, that was great. We've got... And then we have the characters that we know of Kyle Reese and Sarah Connor and John Connor. And so I kind of wanted to just talk through that with you guys of having these characters back, how they lined up. But then, of course, first and foremost, it's Arnold back. And I think if there's anything that saves this movie for me, it is Arnold.
That he's not entirely CGI?
No, I don't know. I dug Arnold as Pops, and that whole idea of that he's the good Terminator. He's the one who's raised Sarah Connor her whole life. I thought he was hilarious every time he tries to smile and he's like, and it's the creepiest thing you've ever seen. But I love too that, you know, kind of, and I know I'm going to mention it and everybody's going to get on me, but just like Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, where they're playing to Harrison Ford's age, they're doing the same thing here with, you know, Arnold. Mm-hmm. They have the CGI Arnold, obviously, that's all young and buff and everything, and then they have the Arnold that is the age now, you know? And, mm-hmm. in fact, they even age him in this movie, you mm-hmm. know? So I loved that. I loved everything that he was doing, and I was very glad to have him back. What about you guys?
I would agree. I'm with you with the concept of Pops and the relationship between, for the most part anyway, between Sarah Connor and Pops, I found, again, for the most part, enjoyable and funny and charming. So he wasn't my favorite thing about the movie, but, and I would have, you know, liked to have seen his butt again, which they decided not to do. In the PG-13 version, whatever.
So Alice still wants to see old Arnold's butt. Got it. Okay.
How about any Arnold butt? Like, it doesn't have to be prefaced with an age here. Like,
this is true.
Any Arnie butt is acceptable for Alice.
So it could have been CGI Arnold butt.
There you go.
Okay
with me. I'd rather see Arnie butt than, you know, some violence. So whatever. But yeah, I'm with you. I actually, he's my favorite character in the original Terminator, and I really enjoy his performance and what he brought to the film. So yeah, I'm with you. I enjoyed him.
Yeah, I always like Arnold. I don't. He has such a, I don't know, unfortunately, stereotypical sort of character now, but I still enjoy all of them, so I'm not too upset about it. I found it really interesting that all of the cast that they made, the major cast, along with a lot of the supporting cast, none of them are American actors.
Or very well known, I would also add.
Or very well known, to be honest. Yep. But, like, John Connor and Kyle Reese are both Australian. Sarah Connor is from London. Matthew Smith was from London.
Yeah, get it right. It's Matthew Smith now. He's a big movie star. No longer just Matt.
Yes.
So you guys can call me Matthew, okay?
Okay.
That's
okay.
Right. Matthew, I'm sorry, Rushing. Matthew. Yeah.
Arnie from Austria, you know, like, none of these characters are American, but they all did an American accent, and I believed every accent. So,
well, hey,
I gotta say,
Superman.
It's well done. Except
is,
for you could
is
see.
A British guy now. So, you know, I mean, apparently, if you want to get anybody to play the quintessential American role, you get somebody else from another country.
You get someone from Australia right now.
That's right. You know, there's nothing like getting an Aussie to play it for you. I mean, Hugh Jackman plays everything from, Blackbeard in the new Pan movie coming out to Wolverine. So,
yeah.
Well, I could say something here about training, but I'll bite my tongue.
I will say, though, that Matthew Smith's accent, you could tell he had to think about it. He had to focus on sounding like an American.
See, no, I totally thought that he was doing that to play, you know, that like he's a computer robot. Generation. Right. So I actually thought that he was doing that on purpose. But I can totally say he was.
I mean, yeah. I think that was kind of that's definitely a good character trait that you're kind of thinking about the fact that you're not really playing a human being. You're playing a machine and, it works. And I think they all take that when you play a Terminator from Arnold because, you know, obviously Arnold has the accent and everything. And so when it comes out of his mouth and all of that, you kind of buy that he is the machine, you know, talking, trying to be a human. And so they all try to emulate that. And so Matthew Smith could be trying to do the same thing. I thought that was I felt bad for him because he really doesn't have a very big role.
No,
and my guess is they maybe promised him, hey, if we do another one, your role will be much bigger. But here he's little more than honestly a cameo. Because he's in like three or four scenes.
Ultimately his character is one of the major characters in that he plays Skynet, but in terms of like his actual time on screen, you're totally right. He doesn't have much of it. And when he does, he's mostly this blue form figure of himself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, I mean, means he didn't even have to be on set.
Right.
He just, you know, did some audio recording. Yeah, exactly. We're going to put you in a cool outfit for one scene. And then the rest of the time, you're just going to come in and do some ADR for us for the character animation. So,
yeah.
What did you guys think? I mean, we've seen Kyle Reese before, and we've seen him played by a lot of different actors. You know, recently in the last film, it was Anton Yelchin, who is also, you know, Chekhov. So I can do that. I can do that. That's right. But now it's Jay Courtney playing him. And what did you guys kind of think about him kind of trying to fill those shoes for, you know, such an iconic character?
I guess I don't have much of a strong opinion about it.
So that's a big
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess I really probably should have watched the original Terminator before I went back and saw this one, so I could make some better comparisons. I think he played it a little dumb for my taste. Not so much that I disliked it, but like just enough that I'm kind of like, come on, man. Like, come on.
I totally hear you on that. For he was meh, I think is a great way to describe it. Or I think if I think about it long enough, that's what I would say. Because he didn't. I wasn't horrified by him. I wasn't like, oh my god, he's the worst actor I've ever seen, or oh, he's not doing that character justice, whatever. I was just sort of like, oh, okay, he's a guy, he's in that role, whatever. You know, like it's happening. Okay.
He's not bad to look at. We'll let
him
go.
He's not bad. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it might have just been better if he was all like, hey, I'm John Connor. You know, like, that might have been more helpful. That's what I'm feeling from you.
No, wait. Are we talking John Connor or are we talking Kyle Reese?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Kyle Reese.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Kyle Reese. But yeah, but whatever. Yeah. They were so similar. I had a hard time keeping track. I'm kind of with you. What I felt like from him, there's so much a shorthand in this movie. You've seen all the other Terminators, so we don't really need to tell you almost anything about these characters. And even though the beginning of the film is a monologue from Kyle Reese's perspective about being saved by John Connor and why he joined the Resistance and all that, this guy needed, I think, to be more dynamic, in the role. And I'm specifically thinking about the scene where he's trying to woo Sarah, or he's kind of pouring his heart out as they're undressing and they're about to go time travel together naked.
I really like the air quotes around time travel. That was nice.
Yeah, time travel. Dink, dink. He's pouring his heart out, and you're supposed to be watching him kind of fall in love with her as she undresses in silhouette and he can see. And it's all very cheesy, and it just, that scene, it needed an actor that could grab that dialogue by the horns and make it his own. And I don't really feel like he does that. And so, whereas Emilia Clarke playing Sarah Connor, one, she looks like Linda Hamilton just enough. Like, if you look at her face, she kind of has the same facial structure, and which was great. If you're going to play the original badass, the badass woman character, which I always think of Sarah Connor kind of being, she really set the stage, especially, and not so much in the 1984 film, but in Judgment Day. I mean, that's that character, and we've known her as that ever since. And so if you're going to be playing her, you have to bring it, and you gotta bring everything you've got to this role. And so I kind of wanted to ask you guys what you thought just kind of about her portrayal, and does she kind of fit within the mold? Is she, you know, badass enough?
I have mixed feelings about her. First of all, pet peeve, it is clearly cold enough that every single other character in that movie is wearing a jacket, not even an actual shirt with sleeves, but an actual shirt with sleeves covered up with a jacket, and she's in a vest the whole time. Bugged the crap out of me.
I got to have a zip of that just in case.
drove me crazy. Anyway, it was very mixed for me. I mean, there were times at which I really, you know, because she's younger, right? So she's a younger version. So there were aspects of her performance that I enjoyed because she's still tough and edgy at times, but then had those moments where, you know, it's pops, right? And she's got this father figure in her life. And so there was that nice softness to her as well, which I think was appropriate for where that character was in her own timeline. But there were times where I was just, I did roll my eyes and a couple of times at some of the stuff that happened there. Like, I liked that she's where the scene you were just talking about, Matthew, where there's the whole tenderness, and then she's basically, you know, he's holding her hand out to her as they're naked getting into the time traveling device, and she's like, whatever, you know, and slaps his hand away, and, you know, is very standoffish. Which then at the very
just because end I film, hugged you naked when we were traveling in time doesn't mean anything.
That's right.
I love that.
Don't touch me.
I didn't say it did. Well, it doesn't. Okay.
But then,
but it doesn't.
At the very end of the film with the big explosion, there's still the, you know, him protecting her to her rescue and her like huddling underneath him kind of a thing. So it was like a real mixed bag for me, but overall I enjoyed her performance more than I enjoyed the actor who played Kyle Reese. But she's no Linda Hamilton.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty succinct summation. Like, I think she did a good job. You could see there were times where like the motherly of John, it took her a little longer than I wanted it to come around to the fact that they're going to have to kill John. You know, like there's just a few moments where I was like, okay, I don't have kids, so maybe I don't get it, but you actually haven't had this kid yet. And I don't know, it got weird, and she got like really like, you can't, okay, Pops has to die so that the rest of humanity survives. Like, that's a tough call. but you had to know this was coming. Like, you've had however many years to prepare yourself. Not my movie.
No, we could save him.
So, but no. Yeah, I mean, there were times where you could tell she was emotionally attached, and I almost felt like they did that because she was the girl and not because she was actually more emotionally attached. And the last note on Kyle Reese is, like, his attachment to John Connor was a little over the top for me, too. Like, just a little walking into the bromance category and less of the
father son. It was two examples of a father and son, right? Because Pops is the father to Sarah Connor, and John Connor is the Pops to Kyle Reese. So it was that parallel between the two relationships.
And I think having them side by side, the one for Pops and Sarah Connor, was so much stronger and I think dynamic than the one between Kyle Reese and John Connor. And like, that one maybe just fell flat for me, which didn't really help me with Kyle Reese's character either. So I don't know. But overall, I think Emilia Clarke did a pretty good job. And I think she owned that character way more than Jay Courtney owned the Kyle Reese character. And I even think she might have owned it a little more than what's his name owned John Connor.
Oh, I totally agree.
Jason Clarke, yeah. I think that you make a great point, because the great relationship between Pops and Sarah, it has such great resonance. And it's because of the way that Arnold and Emilia are playing the role. It's really good. You know, they're really connecting. And I think Jay and Jason really, there's just something off. It doesn't work. And because those two pairings are side by side the whole movie, it doesn't come off as the way they want it to, because the performances from Jay and Jason aren't as good as from Arnold and Emilia. And when you have that problem, when Arnold is out acting you, you know that something is wrong. So,
when the governor of California is out acting you.
Get to the chopper. Do it now. I think she was really good. I think that any of the differences that I kind of see in her, or any of the, I guess, softness that she has, they do a great thing of kind of having her be the alternate timeline version. So she's had a different upbringing and she's had a different life, so there's going to be some differences to her. She's not going to be quite the same, but I mean, she's kicking ass and taking names just as much as anybody else in the film the whole time, and I liked that. The one thing I thought was really interesting, there's the scene when they're trying to escape the hospital, and he says to her something I thought was really interesting, and just, I want to ask you guys about it. He says, you know, just because I'm helping you doesn't mean I don't think you're capable. I thought that was a really interesting statement, and really nice to say, just because the guy does help out the girl in the movie, isn't, we're not saying she's not capable. You know, like, it, and that's not always the case, and I almost felt like that was kind of a meta moment for me in the film, of them kind of speaking to the audience. We're not taking away her badassness, we're just, you know, you can have people help each other out in the movie, and it doesn't have to take away, you know, especially the male-female. And I thought that was kind of nice, because, again, throughout the rest of the movie, I never feel like she can't take care of herself, you know. But, you know, when you're getting shot out by a bunch of people, it's nice to have somebody else by your side, personally.
Yeah, it's true.
It's true, and I always think that's a great moment. I think, you know, it's difficult in today's world, especially when there's a lot more focus being shed on perhaps the inequalities that still exist for women, especially perhaps in Hollywood, you know, not going to call any names, Hollywood, get your act together. But it's
talking to you, Hollywood.
I'm talking to you, Hollywood. I'm going to get meta on your ass right now. It's, you know, I totally agree with you. Of course it's nice to get help, and of course it's not always the case that you don't, that you think somebody trying to help you is them claiming that you're incapable. But of course that, you know, that sword cuts both ways. You know, maybe I didn't ask for your help because I know I'm capable. Maybe, you know what I mean? Like, that's a very difficult conversation to have with anybody, whether it be written in a story or whether you're having it in real life and somebody just offered you a seat on the bus that you don't really want to take, but now you kind of feel obligated because they offered you the seat on the bus, but you didn't really want to sit down. But now if you don't take it, they're going to like think that you're like being rude. You know, it's all of that kind of stuff. But I didn't interpret any help that Sarah Connor in that movie took as anyone saying that she wasn't capable, nor did I take it the other way either. So I guess it wasn't really, I don't know, from a female gaze, it wasn't meta for me. It was just a nice line for a character to say.
Well, and if anything, I think they could have expanded on that a little more, and like it was a good start to something. But I mean, I broke my foot a few months ago, and for the last like 4 months, I've been forced to get help on things that I could always do myself, like getting up and moving around. Like the simple things required someone to help me. And it took a lot for me to be like, I know I can do these things, but whether I really should do them anymore or whether I really, you know, like I have to accept this help now is a difficult thing to go through. And if you'd kind of shown maybe a little bit more of that from her perspective, like her really struggling and learning to accept and the relationship being kind of rocky and then them kind of finding their footing together and getting a good succinct going, that might have been a better way to have tied something like that in and show that like she's really learning to work as part of a team. But I don't think she had that problem to begin with, so they're calling out a problem that doesn't really exist.
Right, she had pops. Yeah, because
right.
Yeah, it would have made more sense if the storyline had been, you know, Pops does die in the end. Spoiler alert, Arnold's still alive at the end of the film.
He's upgraded.
He's upgraded.
Who kills Arnie? Seriously, yeah, who kills Arnie?
I don't know. But if he had died, it would have made more sense if the storyline was them having to learn to be the team that her and Pops used to be. And that he, because, you know, there is that whole dynamic of them falling in love and, you know, Pops saying, I don't really see in him anything. I don't, and even saying directly to Kyle, I don't see anything in you that I should trust you with Sarah, you know? So that's just something that doesn't really play out because he doesn't actually stay dead. And if he had, that storyline might actually kind of meant something, but it doesn't really in the end because we pulled the whole rabbit trick on you and we choreographed how Arnold was going to come back a million times in front of your face. So the moment that he, quote unquote, died, we knew he was coming back.
Yeah.
Well, there's nobody else. I mean, from a dollars perspective, he's the only thing that's there for them, right?
What's going to bring people back to the movie? Yeah.
You know, this made 20. Its 6 day run made 20,000 less than Terminator Salvation. So, like, they're going to be lucky if they can salvage it. So. But they couldn't kill. I mean, if you just looked at it from a practical sense, they couldn't kill Arnie because he was the only thing in the movie that was, you know, their bank, their opening box office bank.
And a note about Amelia's outfit with where she always ran around the black tank top. That was almost a little bit of a like in your face to the Lyndall Hamilton in Judgment Day outfit that she wore most of the movie. Like it was a little bit too much in your face. Like, I get it. Like,
I didn't get it. I was like, why? Why?
You need the zipper. You never know when you're going to need to unzip. I mean,
the black tank top, though, was the outfit that Linda Hamilton wore. But Linda Hamilton was in the desert.
That's right. Exactly. And everyone else around her wasn't in a freaking jacket. Whatever.
Right.
Because it's cold outside.
That's the help. That's the help that Kyle Reese should have given her. He should have given her.
Honey, you need to wear
a jacket.
Yeah, you need to wear.
Just. A jacket. Get on a jacket.
He should have just been like, baby, it's cold outside. Put on
Here's
a jacket.
Yeah. Where do I know that from?
Well, lastly, you know, we talked a little bit about it, but Jason Clark playing John Connor and, you know, he's fine. You know, there's nothing terrible about him or anything, but, you know, he's also the big bad villain in the movie and he's just not... Obviously, he's not Arnold from the original Terminator. He's not that scary. And there's just nothing like we've got a new type of Terminator that's held together by magnetic force fields. But how that happens, I have no clue because there's really like it doesn't make any sense. This is where, You know, a liquid metal Terminator, okay, I'll kind of go with that, even though I still don't know how that walks around and really solidifies itself enough to make it work. But this, where you're like mini nanites that are held together by some sort of magnetic force field that I don't know where it comes from, it just didn't make a ton of sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, I liked the character and the acting in the character better pre him becoming a Terminator. So even though that was not the best delivered St. Crispin's Day speech ever in the world, as a matter of fact, it was kind of very uninspiring. That the character of him is the
it's because he didn't sound like this. We're gonna bring the end of those Terminators now.
And see, I was out, like, it just wasn't inspiring for me. Like, he was a guy shouting a bunch of stuff. I was not inspired to believe he's my savior of humanity.
Well, that's basically what a St. Crispin's Day speech is a guy yelling at you about how your death is gonna be honorable, blah blah blah. And generally, unless you're in Shakespeare and you're a British actor delivering those lines, then generally it falls flat for me anyway. But I still liked him better as a battle-hardened general than as the Terminator. Because as you just said, Matt, I didn't find him particularly scary. You know, like, he just wasn't that intimidating. And I will say that this is one of the things that I really hate about, I don't even know what to call it, that you become... You need more. Like, you get used to something. I think there's an actual word for it that I can't think of. When you get used to something, and so you want, it has to be bigger, badder, and more violent, or, you know, more boobs, or more whatever it is that you're getting, because you've become numb to it. And I feel like that's a mistake that people make in movies all the time. So, like, we're not just going to have a Tyrannosaurus Rex. We're going to have the whatever the hell the thing was called. And then
Indominus Rex.
Yeah, exactly. Indominus Rex. And here, you know, each Terminator, like, has to be different. And this one was, like, so CGI'd out that it was so much less interesting to me. You know, like, I would have rather seen CGI Arnold and then... just Arnold with a little bit of stuff on his face and have that be the Terminator than this ridiculous looking all CGI. I mean, that whole end of the third act, you know, ending was just boring. For me, that was like the most boring part of the movie, even though it was supposed to be exciting.
Machine and
and the whole thing. And then he comes out and there's the battle at the very end before Arnold doesn't die. Like, that was the most boring part of the whole movie to me. Boring.
I think with this one, they were trying to take maybe... So they went with this whole, like, nanite, like, machine bonded with human tissue sort of approach. I sort of felt like they were trying to do a more intelligent Terminator. They're trying to scare you with the sheer amount of knowledge and the sheer advancement. And I thought they were trying to kind of scare you a little bit more with that. But we've seen that, so it really wasn't new or scary. And at the same time, he didn't play it with this sort of maniacal evil genius. He played it with this sort of, like, cocky, I know where you are, I know everything, ha ha ha, sort of approach that wasn't really terrifying, more I'm just going to show you the inevitable and we're just going to wait for it to happen, which isn't really as interesting to the audience as actually trying to make him kind of scary.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree with you. One of the interesting things about John Connor here is that it brought to mind the whole idea in The Dark Knight. You know, Harvey Dent says, you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And this franchise has lasted so long that now the consummate hero of the franchise, the one that we're trying to keep alive through every means possible, John Connor, he's now the bad guy. And that would have been exciting if I hadn't known it was coming, because they ruined it in the trailer.
Right.
Like, come on. I was so mad because that should be a huge, like, twist in the film. And yet they gave it away in the trailer, and I was just, I was hacked. So, yeah, he's not bad. Jason Clarke is a good actor. I think the direction that he was given here, this just doesn't work for me. And you know, honestly, I how can I be surprised when the film is it's directed by the same guy who directed Thor: The Dark World, and I couldn't stand Thor: The Dark World. So I mean, I'm really just not. I'm not surprised. On another note, they keep talking about in this film that Pops is old, not obsolete. And it made me think about franchises in general. And I was talking to my wife on the way home, and why do franchises last? You know, what is it that keeps us coming back and wanting to come back? And I question for you guys, because after this movie, I really was struck out, do we need any more movies in the Terminator franchise when every single film is the exact same plot? I mean, literally, just it's not even like a James Bond movie where there's nice variations on a theme, you know, or you could get an amazing, you know, film like Skyfall after 50 years where it teaches you something about Bond you never knew from the films, you know, like it's literally just we're trying to save the world from Judgment Day every single time. So I wanted to ask you guys, do you really see the need, especially in a franchise like this, for it to continue? And if it should continue, I guess I was wondering if you maybe had a good reason.
I have no good reason. I mean,
Just put it out there.
I have no good reason. I have no reason at all, because I'm definitely of the camp that I'm a little bit tired of it, frankly. And not just of franchises in general. I'm tired of them. I really would like, again, talking to you, Hollywood, would like original story ideas and original concepts, to something fresh and new to start coming to the screen. I'm really tired of franchises and remakes. Really tired of them. So I don't think there was a need for this film, and I don't think there will be a need for another one. Leave Good Enough Alone. Should have stopped after the second one.
I would want a second one in this new reboot, only if they decided to sort of step away from that same plot that they've had for all of the movies, and they were to keep the universe, and they were to keep a lot of the theories, and maybe show you another story that's happening during the same time, or have the characters experience something different or new. And now that you've created this whole new, you know, dimension, maybe they can do that. So I think for me, I'm cautiously optimistic that hopefully they understand that and that's where they can go. Less optimistic after seeing the scene at the end of the credits or the middle of the credits where you find Skynet rebuilding itself and you're like, great, all right, here we go, all over again. So, I don't know. I think I like the characters and I like the universe. I wish they'd use it differently. And I think it would be the same with other franchises if they chose to use those franchises differently. But I'm so freaking tired of hearing the Spider-Man origin story over and over and over and over and over and over and over
word.
And over again.
Word.
Yeah, I do. I feel like this movie, they're trying to say, it's a whole new world. But it's really not, because nothing's changed. We keep giving you the same old crap, and you'll buy it and like it, you know? I think, you know, this is a really good question. You know, we have all these franchises that they are coming back, and Jurassic World came back with a vengeance. Star Wars is about to come back on the big screen again. You know, things like that. We just learned today that there's going to be another Star Wars anthology film, which we knew they were going to do, but we didn't know what was going to be out. It's going to be out of young Han Solo. So all these films keep coming out in these franchises. And to me, what makes a franchise last is that you can tell interesting new stories with similar characters, the same characters, and there's growth and there's change. But what's interesting about the Terminator franchise specifically is that as much as things change, they all stay the same, you know, because we really have just been with the same character. I mean, we're talking about old friends, quote unquote, and it's Kyle Reese and it's John Connor and it's Sarah Connor and it's a Terminator played by Arnold. He just happens to be lovable this time. We want to get the plush doll of him. You know,
you
want to
snuggle him.
Yeah, I want to snuggle him because he's Pops. And so it is kind of obsolete, if you ask me, because the story itself has kind of really outlived its usefulness. And honestly, it really kind of outlived its usefulness with Judgment Day, for all intents and purposes. It should have just ended there. And of course, they made Rise of the Machines, and then they made Terminator Salvation, and now we're at Genesis. And Genesis, Planet Forbidden, that is! And this should have just, I think it should have been forbidden, because we just, you know, end on a downer with Terminator Salvation and just don't go forward. Because I kind of wanted to think like you did, Drea, where I'd like to see more, but I walked out of this one thinking, I'm good. You know, I don't never need to see another Terminator film again. And I think that's the random parts that I was getting down to, is that one, they had ruined it for me because they had told me the big twist, quote unquote. I put that in big air quotes because it wasn't a twist, because I saw it in the trailer. And so many movies these days are kind of doing that to us, where they're ruining the big moments in the film, where instead of getting that movie and being like, oh my God, that's so awesome, you know, it's like, oh, I saw that in the trailer.
Because they're trying to convince you to go to the movie, so they want to give you something awesome, and it's like, no.
Yeah, or, you know, we're just talking about movies that won't come out for like 10 years on a schedule, and it's ruining what's going to happen to a movie that comes out next year. Like, you know, they're talking about Star Wars 8 rumors. 7 hasn't even come out yet, and I barely know anything about that. But you're already talking about who you might cast in it and what role he might play, and that could tell me about characters that are in this movie that I'm still not sure whether they'll live or die or even who they are. You know, it's just like, I don't want to know these things, and I feel like Hollywood is so about trying to get you to come to the films. We're talking to Hollywood a lot in here.
We are.
Hollywood. But, hear
yeah,
me
listen
speak.
Up. But I miss the, I guess I just, in this, going to this film and seeing it, I miss the surprise. You know, I miss having that one or two trailers to kind of give you a little bit of the movie, pique your interest, you pay your $11, you sit down and you don't really know anything, and then you come out and you're like, whoa, that was fun. That was awesome. Do you remember that? You know, instead of it being like, oh, well, that was okay. Except that, you know, like I could have just watched the trailer and it would have been like fine. And, you know, I just feel like Kristen Wiig from Saturday Night Live, and I talk about how awesome it could have been, because if I had directed it, then I would have gotten a bit Brad Pitt.
Why can't we take the Terminator universe and zip back to the future / past / I don't even know what the hell it is anymore, and show the story of like a young family or a young girl or a young boy who doesn't know John Connor yet, only knows of John Connor, but also has to fight the Terminators, because let's be honest here, the best part about the movie are the Terminators. And like, why can't we tell that story, which you'll know some things in it, but you could completely write that from scratch and make it almost completely original. Like, why doesn't Hollywood give us that story instead of, you know, why do we have to rehash the same story over and over again?
Or maybe we could just create a whole new franchise out of something that doesn't exist yet.
Well, it's,
you know,
too. It's interesting, you know, because Hollywood, above anything, is a money-making machine. It is the largest unsubsidized industry in the United States. It makes money hand over fist. So the people who run Hollywood know what the frack they're doing when it comes to making money. Now, obviously, they don't always get it right, and there are some huge flops, but, you know, it's been years since a studio has gone under. they know, and I don't necessarily, and I totally going to sound like an elitist snob right now, but, you know, it isn't what you and I like and would want to see isn't necessarily what people spending tons of money on the weekend, opening weekend, are interested in seeing. So I personally would love to see the major Hollywood studios making these more original films and whatnot. But I'm not so naive that I don't understand that what they want to do is make as much money as they can in the first 2 days that a movie comes out, and that they are going to make creative choices that they think anyway are going to get them that, whether or not it's in my opinion a good choice or not.
A lot of these reboots and revamps and I don't even know what you call franchises are safe. They've made money in the past. You can guarantee a certain amount of income. So I see why they're doing them. It's one of those like secret wishes that I wish they'd just take a chance every once in a while and give me something new and original every once in a while, knowing it might lose money. But at least we tried. But you're totally right, Alice. They don't do that. Nice little
just take a chance on a unknown kid, you know, from the
and I would
the
also
wrong side of the street.
I think it's interesting, Matthew. We were talking about this thing that the three of us have all said that we're kind of done with, although it's incredibly hard to do because the access to information or in having information in front of your face, even through your friends, is like overwhelming. But I almost feel like fandom in the, you know, otaku kind of sense of fandom is somewhat responsible for that behavior, because when we do love something, we love it very rabidly and we do want to access lots of information about it and have it consume it in lots of very various ways and whatnot. So I don't know. I'm having really mixed feelings of late about, you know, my obsessive behaviors about things and what impact it might be having on other aspects of my enjoyment of the arts.
That's one of the things I think that for me I appreciated about the DC film universe and what they're trying to do right now, which is they're going to take characters we have seen before, but they are telling us different story. They're actively doing things that, you know, we haven't seen yet, and working to modernize and take the characters in different directions and broaden the horizons of what it means to say be Superman, or of course what we're going to see with the next Batman. I mean, you know, it, everything I know about the new Batman that he's playing, I mean, it feels like a Batman I've never seen on screen before. It, you know, so those kind of things I really appreciate. You know, if you are going to give me the 20th different version of Spider-Man in the last 5 years, I'm really hoping that it is different. You learn that lesson. We don't see an origin, you know, all that kind of stuff. So Alice, you're right on track. You know, I think they want to do the same thing with the Star Wars right now. You have to be real careful because you don't want to oversaturate the market to the point where you get with Star Trek, where I think it was so oversaturated that people stopped caring about it and it stopped being really good, you know? So yeah, it's something that's really hard to do. And unfortunately sometimes Hollywood is a little short-sighted and that it will run something into the ground as fast as possible and then just kind of go to the next thing and run that into the ground. And hoping that they'll start to try and take care of these things, because otherwise we are going to just get complete fatigue. So, and this is, I think this is one of those movies that, and the reason we're having this whole conversation about these things is that this is what this movie I think is bringing up in people, this idea that they're just tired of the Terminator franchise, and it feels tired. It feels old and obsolete. So,
unlike Pops, that's right.
Exactly. Pops is fine. Well, I wanted to ask you guys, as we've talked about this movie, we've talked around this movie, the culture around the movie that we've seen in Hollywood, for this film kind of walking out, what would you rate it? And then where would you put it in? Let's do our pantheon of Terminator films, one through, you know, five.
I guess I would rate it, my rating would be happy I didn't pay full price. But glad I saw it on the big screen.
that is a Reading Room rating if I've ever heard one. I love it.
Where does it fall? Oh my God, where does it fall? Oh God. I'm gonna put it above Salvation.
So fourth in the lineup.
So Genesis before Salvation.
Genesis before Salvation.
That's biblical.
There you have it. one of the rare moments that I will be biblical.
I don't know. Oh God. So I'll give it my order and then my rating. I'll be different. I would agree with Alice. 1, 2, 3. So Genesis, then Salvation. Mostly because I cannot remember Salvation. So that's how much of an impact it had on me. I would give it a, you got Folgers in the morning when you wanted like good coffee.
Excellent.
You still got coffee.
Yeah.
You drank it, yeah. But you ended up with the crappy like Maxwell House or Folgers in the morning. So.
Excellent.
Ugh, I hate that stuff. I'm a coffee snob. So anyway,
join the ranks.
It's a whole other show. Coffee FM. This one for me, okay, I would say Judgment Day, original Terminator, Terminator Genesis, Rise of the Machines, Salvation. I actually liked this one, I think, more than Rise of the Machines. I don't know. Maybe Arnold was even more fun in this one, I thought. And so that's, and for me, again, what saves this movie in every single way that I need it to be saved to like not make it, you know, just utter complete sewage is just having so much fun watching Arnold. And other than that, it's not a terrible movie. It's just so, you know, and when I come out of a film, I don't want to feel like, you know, and I paid full price for it.
I'm
so,
sorry.
Unfortunately, I'd say, you know, this is probably like a 2.5, 3-star film out of 5, you know, it's not terrible.
It's not terrible. It's just, it's,
you know,
it's not unwatchable.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's just, it's not what you want it to be when you think of the greatness of where Terminator has come from. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. And they have fallen pretty far.
Indeed. Again, it goes back to the same thing I sort of had with Jurassic World. It was a fun movie. It was fun. They're Terminators. They killed stuff. You blew other stuff up. You know, woman saved the day. Yeah. Like it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah, and I mean, unlike, you know, Jurassic World, where I feel like they were really hitting some great themes and updating themes from Jurassic Park, and I think even doing some things there, asking some great questions. You know, this movie, if there are any questions that are being asked, they're the exact same questions in the exact same way that we had with, you know, the original Terminator. We had with all the other Terminators. There's nothing new under the sun with Terminator, and that's why I think it needs to be obsolete at this point. And I, you know, this isn't a terrible way to go out. It's way better than going out on this film, never having another one, and you know, pretending like Salvation never happened. You know, I think if you watch, you know, 1, 2, 3, and then this is 4. It's not bad, you know. 3 and 4 round out everything nicely, you know. They don't end up on the super high note that you'd like to have, because you're not going to reach that after 2. But yeah, it is what it is, and I hope you guys had fun listening to it. I didn't know how much fun we were going to have, but Alice fell out of her chair pretty much at one point. And so we had a blast talking about Terminator Genesis today, but it is not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM the past week. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
You know, watching it live to 3 months after the series ends to watch the Mirror Universe episodes.
You're like, whoa, man, I heard season 3 got dark, but this is crazy.
It got darkly. Anyway.
Oh.
Earl Grey.
We divide the ship into one of two ways. Port goes to port. I better not see any starboard guys on the starboard phaser target practice. You guys know which side of the ship you're on.
The orb.
And so they cannot impart to him the knowledge that he needs in order to raise his son. And Worf doesn't want to raise a human son. Like you said earlier, he didn't get the son that he wanted. He wants to raise a Klingon son.
The Ready Room.
We knew that Spock was popular, and we knew that Dad had some fans, but we were not prepared for what we saw happening in the social media, in the print media. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the New York Times reported that they got more hits on Dad's obituary than any other personality in the history of the paper.
To the journey! You're not a member of our race or a member of our culture, so we're going to say no.
That's kind of boring, and yet I don't know what else to do.
Oh, screw you!
Sorry, buddy.
Warp 5.
I remember watching Broken Bow when Enterprise first debuted when I was in high school. I remember revisiting it now in full, and I had forgotten the fact that Future Guy had actually played an integral role from the get-go with Silic and the Suliban, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's all of these top-notch filmmakers, like people like Walter Murch, who literally wrote the book on editing. He, like, those guys all teaming up to make a big action kids movie, I think is really cool.
The 602 Club.
I think he's very much recreating that THX feel, and you may disagree with it. You may not think it's, you know, it's great, but it's on purpose. He wants that world to be that way.
Let me just say, conceptually, I agree with that. In terms of execution, that's where I think he failed.
Literary Treks.
It's amazing to me, as I reread these stories, how much of it I just kind of think of as Deep Space Nine these days, even though it wasn't part of Deep Space Nine, you know, the actual series.
Axanar, the official podcast.
It is the spirit of TOS that matters, that's being captured, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the aesthetic. The aesthetic was 1966 to 1969 that had its moment, it had its time, and there's a certain amount of charm still to that. But it doesn't allow you to push the narrative forward because that type of aesthetic holds creativity back, in my opinion.
Women at Warp.
So she definitely knows cats. I say that right off the bat.
She knows cats and bones.
Yes, definitely. Of course Bones would get annoyed with all the cat fur.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows, guys. Find out what we've been talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and in whatever universe we're in with Terminator. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. We're big on Apple. We're a featured provider there in Apple, and you can help us grow there and in the ways that only the listeners can do by subscribing and giving us some star rating reviews. You know this is a 5-star podcast. I mean, you just heard Drea and Alice kill it today. They deserve that 5-star rating, and I just host. So, yeah, I appreciate that. I hope you'll do that for us. If you're not an Apple user, you can find us all over the place. Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone. You can grab and download the MP3 file from the website, and you can also get the RSS link as well. One of the biggest things that we have in trying to bring all the content to you is it costs a lot to do that, and we would love for you to visit Patreon to see how you can support us keeping all of these shows coming to each week. And we try to have a new show for you almost every day of the week. We're recording and editing as much and as fast as we can to get you the best quality content out there. And so visit patreon.com/trekfm. You'll find all the goals that we're trying to reach right now. And we've got some great perks for you, too. We have exclusive content. My producers here, my executive producers, and of course, the associate producers on the show, they get the show early. You can get exclusive content. We're working on some amazing gifts for you guys as well. Working very hard on that. You can also get seats in the content development team, and we're doing the Patreon roundtables. Will is working so hard on that. We had our first one. So if you'd like to join that, check everything out at patreon.com/trekfm. I do want to say a special thanks to my executive producers, Norman C. Lau and C. Brian Jones. I love those guys so much. They are amazing, and it's so much fun to get to be here at the network with them. And then, of course, Ken Tripp. He has been with me for so long on this show, and it means so much to have his support through Patreon and choosing the 602 Club as his place to be an associate producer. If you want to contact us and tell us what you thought about Terminator Genisys, we'd love to hear it. Go to trek.fm/contact. Leave us a voicemail. I would love to have a voicemail for this show. I would do a jig. Nobody would see it, but I would do it, and then I would tell you about it and how I broke my ankle.
Wait.
Go to the sidebar.
Wait. I say that for the first person who leaves you a voicemail, you have to sing for them.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, and they can pick the song?
Yeah, I think maybe that you have to sing the song from the Disney movie that everybody is...
Let It Go. Frozen.
Let It Go. You have to sing Let It Go from Frozen.
Okay. And we'll I can upload the video to the Babel Conference.
There you go.
And it'll be a special message to them. If you leave me a voicemail, which is on the sidebar on the show page, or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm, you'll be getting that special love letter song there on the Babel Conference, and it's Alice's fault. So if I break the Babel Conference,
so you're
because
welcome.
I get so yes, many
you're
likes.
You're welcome, listeners. Welcome.
You're welcome, Internet. Guys, one of the coolest things you can do through Twitter and Facebook, we're on Twitter at TrekFM. You can share all the things that we share with you. So when you see us tweet out a show, you can share that to all your friends with your social media there on Twitter. You could do the same thing with Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And of course, there is the listeners only discussion group, the Babel Conference. Type BABEL into the search field on Facebook, or go to the website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar. Now, I have to say that it is always a special thing when the amazing ladies from Educating Geeks join me. And I'm so glad that y'all were here today. Drea, it's been wonderful having you. I mean, we had you on Jurassic World, and now we're back on Terminator Genisys. So hopefully you'll pop up again, but tell everybody where they can find you online.
You can find me on Twitter at PCFCHICK, or on any of the Educating Geeks pages, places. I also do the Twitter for Educating Geeks, which is at Educating Geeks on Twitter. Because that wasn't redundant. So, yeah. I'll let my boss lady tell you more about Educating Geeks.
Not redundant. Not.
Chip going dead. Must recharge.
Alice, tell everybody where they can find you. And then tell everyone about Educating Geeks.
Gosh.
The 5-star podcast that everybody should be listening
to.
That's
very, very kind of you. Matthew.
She got it right.
Educating Geeks, you can find us at educatinggeeks.com, as Drea just mentioned. She's one of our wonderful associate producers on the show, and she does run our Twitter feed. We're also on Tumblr and Facebook, Instagram even, and you can go straight to the website at educatinggeeks.com to find us. We'd love to have you come take a listen and let us know what you think of our show. Matthew is actually joining us at the end of the year for the 50th anniversary of the novel Dune. So he is going to be... Now, Matt, are you one of the folks who's reading it for the first time?
I am one of the folks who's reading it for the first
Excellent.
Time. It's one
so
of
exciting.
Those sci-fi epics, yeah, that I've just never gotten around to. And I'm really excited to be able to kind of dive in because... You know, something like this, it needs to be experienced, and I'm glad to be experiencing with some people who know what they're talking about, and others who may be like me, where like, I don't know, I just read this 800-page tome, so.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about it too. It's a classic. You know, if you love science fiction, it's a book you really do want to tackle at some point in your life. And we're very excited to have you on specifically for that one. So definitely check that out. It'll be coming out really toward the end of the year. And I am ALCBKR just about anywhere on the internet if you want to look for me.
Well, I am on Twitter at MattRushing02. And I'm going to start telling people this because I'm on Instagram at MRushing. And I do put out pictures there about the shows that we do here on Trek FM. So you can find information there as well. I'm also on The Orb with Christopher Jones. We talk exclusively about the best Star Trek show there ever was, called Deep Space Nine. And if you don't believe us, you need to join us on The Orb, where we tell you how right we are. And I also do Literary Treks with Dan, which is so much fun because we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We're talking about the only new Star Trek here on the network with those new books and comics. In fact, this week we're going to be talking about a brand new book in the New Frontier series that Peter David just wrote in a three-part series. We're starting that this week, so check that out with us. And, of course, we're going to be reviewing some of the new comics that came out as well. And I have my own personal blog, so if all of that is not enough for you, I do movie reviews and book reviews of things that interest me but just kind of don't fit into what else I do. So you can find that at 42alifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me. And come with me if you want to live.
Anytime, sir, anytime.